Here we go. Okay, here we go. You're listening to Barry Mack on Irish Radio Australia. On the line, I think from Brisbane, we have the Irish Ambassador to Australia, Ambassador Noel White. Good morning, Noel, and I believe it's getting close to the end of your tenure in Australia.
Good morning, Barry. Thanks very much for having me. It's very kind of you. It is, Barry, we're coming to the end. This is how it ends. 25th of August will be my last day of this wonderful privilege and this wonderful adventure as Ireland's ambassador here in Australia.
Have you enjoyed it? No.
It's been marvellous, Barry. It's been absolutely fantastic. And it's been great over the last few days going around meeting people and, well, great. It's sad as well. Saying goodbye to people. It's been a wonderful experience professionally and personally for me and for my family, and I leave in no doubt about the privilege that it is to be nominated as your country's ambassador abroad. It's a great privilege still to this day.
Well, you see, it was my
great good fortune to be nominated here for Australia. It's been fantastic.
Well, the price of doing such a good job and meeting so many people is, unfortunately, you have an awful lot of goodbyes to say, and I mean, I hate saying goodbye to anybody. That's why I don't ever do it, because I've been saying goodbye for years to my mum. She's 96 and still hale and hearty. Yeah. So I don't envy your task, but I wish you luck.
It is tinged with sadness, and it's I was saying to somebody here yesterday, when asked what does it mean, or what does the posting mean for you, and so on, it's too early to say. We need to get away from it, step back from it, and unpack it and absorb it and internalise it and then understand what it was about. Yes. But, you know, our kids went to school here. Two of them finished school here. I've worked here now for four and a half years. My wife worked here while she was here, and she supported me in this role for that time as well. And we've made contacts and friends and networks and whatever you want to call them. All around this country, but it's not something you simply walk away from, forget, and then start a new chapter.
But we
are enriched by it, and there's no question about that. You're fortified by the friendship. It's been fantastic.
But you also have other areas. You have New Zealand and other islands, and is it Fiji as well? Is that involved in
Fiji, PNG, and Solomon Islands? That's been part of an adventure, and to have the opportunity to familiarize yourself with these parts of the world in these conditions is not something that you treat lightly. It's a great privilege, and it's been wonderful to do it.
But sure, is that not ridiculous, the amount of space that you have to cover? That'd kill a dead horse.
It is a big space, but we're not unusual in that, in having several accreditations in the region out of Canberra. Many other embassies and ambassadors would have the same or similar type of mandate as I've had here. So it is doable. It's not without its challenges, that's for sure. But, you know, the trick is to adapt to this and to use your time wisely and to be able to maximise the possibilities when you travel to these various countries.
You know, with your level of fitness, it should have entered you into some competition in Rio.
I'm not so sure about that. I saw those guys in the rowing last night, Barry, and I think that's not me. You know, that's not me. But isn't it fantastic? They're looking good. So we came with our first medals. So it's fantastic to see it. But yeah, you know, it's nice of you to say so, Barry. But you're lying.
No, it's great. But you know, I'm just referring to you leave a greyhound behind. Ireland has a greyhound industry. I mean, here in New Zealand, I was going to say, good God, here in New South Wales, we've just trying to do away with it. We have a bit of a dictatorial premier here who has decided, well, no, we're not going to have any of this stuff anymore. But if it's well managed, like it seems to be well managed in Ireland, I think there's 9 or 10 venues right around the country. Surely that there's no need for it to be totally destroyed.
Listen, Barry, you know I'm not going to enter into a discussion around greyhound policy in New South Wales. But nice try. But I will say this about it. You know, this is the question of the jurisdiction around these issues is a matter for the government of New South Wales that decides within its own mandate as to what it wants to do. And I wouldn't for a moment seek to pass comment on that. There are other states in this country that continue to have greyhound racing carried on in them. And we have greyhound racing continues to carry on in Ireland in a similar way. So you know, governments take decisions on the basis of the best knowledge available to them, and that's their prerogative and their right. What's happened in this case.
No, I was just saying that they should take the example from Ireland, that it, when it's well managed, it can work quite well with no cruelty at all, really. I mean, you know, this has been... That's the point I was trying to make.
No, I know. I accept that. And you know I'm not going to enter into it directly.
I know,
but,
yeah.
It is a point, nonetheless, that governments, be they state governments or national governments, take decisions on the basis of the information available to them. And they make judgments on the basis of that information. And they make judgments about that information. That's a prerogative of the respective governments, and obviously this decision has been taken in certain conditions. So, you know, it's not a conversation that we're having in Ireland. I know people involved in the grey hound industry, and that's a matter for New South Wales or for Ireland or for Victoria or for indeed ACT. The ACT government as well has followed the decision of New South Wales.
Yes.
And that's its prerogative to do so.
Fair enough. The Ireland that you left 4 years ago, I can't believe that you're here 4 years, yeah. Noel. Where has the time gone to? But you've done a great job, I've got to say. I've had an awful lot of people commenting on your activities and the way you do stuff. You do a very good job, and I hope to God the next guy, your successor...
You're very kind, Barry. Look, no, thanks for saying that. You do the best you can, and you try to get around as much as you possibly can. And this has been an important part of it, because the country is so big, and you mentioned this earlier on. There are Irish communities everywhere. And, you know, people thank me for coming to see them and dropping by and so on. And that's very kind of them to do that, but they actually don't need to really. It's part of the job. And, you know, I strongly believe that, you know, Irish communities are entitled to see their ambassador as much as possible. And with that in mind, you get out and you meet people. And, you know, I'm always, no matter how far the distance, and you look at certain trips and you think this could be long, it's going to be exhausting, whatever, you always come back energized by the contact with people. I don't know if I've done a good job. I don't know how we measure what a good job is. It's very nice if people say I have, and I accept that very much. I accept it graciously. But it's hard to measure this job. You do the best you can. But I will say one thing about which I think is important. There's a deep sense of responsibility that goes with this. And you try to honour that responsibility, and you try to honour and respect the reputation that goes with it, because it's not just your personal reputation. It's the reputation of the country and the reputation of all your compatriots around Australia, New Zealand and the other countries. But that's what you're dealing with, and that's what you have responsibility for. And you need to honour that and respect that responsibility. And just to say, you try to leave the bilateral relationship in as good or better a condition you found it than when you arrived, and you try to do no harm in that. And at a very practical level, situations arise and have arisen for me over the last four and a half years where, you know, you feel the need to take the public stage and to comment on issues or comment on remarks or comment on the economy and so on, and you hope that you find the words that adequately and correctly express or articulate the views that your compatriots are having, that your compatriots have, or rather that your compatriots can identify with what you say, and they say, yes, I agree with that, or yes, he has expressed himself in a way, as Ambassador of Ireland, in a way that I understand and that I identify with. And if you can do that, it's good. But look, we try, and we do our best with it, and hopefully it works out.
Listeners, you're listening to Ambassador White, Irish Ambassador to Australia, for another few days. You're listening to him on Irish Radio Australia. I know that when matters have arrived, you have taken the public stage. You have jumped, and your jump has been very timely in answering the criticism or whatever the heck was happening at the time. So you've done your job. You've done it very well. And we're very fortunate here in this country. We have had really good quality ambassadors over the years. You know, you're well up there with them, mate. You're doing a great job. Who's your successor? What's his name?
Thanks for saying that, Barry. My successor is a chap called Brendan O'Quailey, and he's coming out here in the second week of September. And I know Brendan well. I've worked with him in the past. and I think he's going to go very well out here. I think he'll like him, and he's a lot of experience working with Irish communities abroad, a lot more than I had when I arrived here, I have to say.
Right.
Working with Irish communities with the diaspora through several postings. I won't spoil it all, he can tell you himself, but he's been through several of those postings. He's a lot of experience, and he's a good guy. And as I've said to several groups, small, medium, and large groups that I've been talking to around Australia over the last couple of weeks, I have no doubt but that, I certainly hope, and I have no doubt that the Irish community here will give to Brendan the same, will accord to Brendan the same openness and support and guidance that they generously and readily and without hesitation accorded to me. And I know once he has that support from the community, he's flying. But make no mistake about this, that support, those little words of encouragement on the radio, meet people in places, little words of encouragement along the way go an awful long way, because we're all trying to find our way in this. We're trying to find the way to best represent the country and the compatriots. It's a matter of judgment. Trying to get that judgment right is not something to be taken for granted. So when you get those little words of encouragement along the way, it helps enormously.
You have been very, very, very smart, very alert to the fact that community radio is a very useful way of reaching people, and you've latched on very, very early in a piece. I think I may have been one of the first people to have a chat with you on community.
Yeah, you're my first, Barry, and it's appropriate that I think you're actually going to be my last. So I think I've in terms of community radio, I've bookended the entire posting with you, Barry.
Well, that's great.
I agree with you entirely. I've been delighted to use it, delighted to have that platform. It's been very useful because of the size of the country, and the capacity it gives you to reach out to communities far away. And you get that multiplier effect nowadays as well.
Yep.
Because the interviews are streamed and they're podcasted and they're repeated and so on. And it's not just about a personal platform. It's about making the embassy, making contact with its community. And also articulating, expressing views, hopefully prompting some debate and discussion. But in the times we live in, and in a country of this size, when you talk about covering Ireland, New Zealand, Australia, New Zealand, and so on, in a country of this size, I think, you know, you use any platform, any worthwhile platform that you can get. If that presents itself, then you grab it with both hands and say, yes, please. So I've been delighted to, first of all, that these community radios exist. And I've been delighted to use them whenever they've invited me on. So yes, thank you very much, because you're on a good show, Barry. The production values are high, and it's a pleasure to use it as a way of connecting with people. And we get feedback from it as well. It's the same thing, which is it's just a human thing. You get that reaction.
Sure, you do. Yeah.
We like this. We like more of this, less of that. We agree with you on this. We're not so sure about that. This is the kind of stuff you get. You also get people, of course, as you know, who say things like, that Barry Mack guy, he's really mean and cruel to you on the radio, and Ohio, what's going on there? don't worry, I can mind myself.
It can't be nice all the time. I can't be nice all the time. I've got a bite every so often, you know.
That's what I say. Let him take the occasional bite he needs it, you know. But, you know, it's not mortal or anything like that.
It gets him listening and gets him interested. What on earth did he say?
I defend your message, Barry. I'm with them all the way. I kept coming back for more.
You're always welcome. It's an old trick that we employ just to, you know, get the people talking, get the conversation going. It actually works as well.
No, absolutely. No, I agree with you. It's been very good, and there've been several of them from New South Wales all the way across to Perth to WA. And you know, you can imagine how difficult it is to get out to WA regularly and to maintain the contacts with the community,
exactly,
and
yes,
various cultural societies. And you know, if you have the opportunity to avail of community radio, then of course you take it, you know.
Well, we're very glad that you did. So what happens with you now, Noel? You're back into Dublin.
Yeah, I'm going back to Dublin. I'm going back to Dublin for a couple of years at least. It's time to go home. I've been away for 4.5 years. It's not just 4.5 years. It's the distance that I've been for 4.5 years, it means that I feel the need really to connect back into Dublin.
You're homesick.
Well, no, I'm not actually. I think it's just I need to get some balance back into the thing. I'm going to miss this place.
Yeah.
But I know that. I said to other people about this. People say, "Oh, are you looking forward to going home?" I said, "It's not that I'm looking." I wouldn't actually put it like that. I'm ready to go home. It's time to go. It's time to hand it over. You know, there's a cycle in this thing, like there is in many other jobs.
Sure.
And I think I've reached that point in the cycle where I've enjoyed it. I've done what I can with it. Doubtless, when I sit back and think about it, I'll think of other things I would have liked to have done a little bit more of. But that's just the way these things go. But what I've no doubt in my mind about is that it is time to pass on the baton, because that's the way this job works. Give it to a new person, a new guy, and at the moment, for me to close this chapter and try and, you know, work out what it all means and to start the next phase. Obviously, from a family point of view as well, I need to reconnect in the Northern Hemisphere a bit. I have a child still in school, so
right.
that needs to be looked after. I have to look after the children, Barry.
You have indeed. Come on, I'm sure you do that very well.
All those bits and pieces come together, and yeah, I mean, I think probably a couple of years, and then we'll have to think about what the next move is after that. But Dublin's a good place. Going back to a much different Ireland, Barry, than the one I came out from.
That's just I was just going to say that very much different. I mean, how will that affect the relations between England and Ireland? Do you think it'll bring them a bit closer?
I think Brexit, as they used to say about a famous beer, it reaches the parts. It reaches the parts that other beers don't reach. Brexit is all encompassing. It is going to. It is already. It reaches across the entire range of policies that policy settings that we have. I think part of the challenge of Brexit, the main part of the challenge of Brexit, is the uncertainty of it and the actual impact of it. If you saw a train coming and say, "Well, the train is going through, and you know it's going to hit X, Y, and Z when it comes in. Let's deal with X, Y, and Z, or let's fix X, Y, and Z afterwards." The challenge with this is that it's so all encompassing that no one can say for sure where all the implications of this thing are. So you're trying to set up contingency arrangements to deal with all the possible fallout from it.
Let's hope that Theresa May doesn't turn into a Maggie Thatcher. We'll all be in deep trouble.
Well, briefly, I mean, what you're looking at in our case, you're looking at the obvious ones, the standout areas are the trade. You know,
yes.
Over €1 billion a week trading between Ireland and Britain.
Yep.
There's the question of the common travel area, which is central to what we've been doing. We've had that common travel area between the UK and Ireland since 1922. The question as well of the border between north and south, which is, as you know, a soft border, which an entire generation of politicians and public servants and others and community groups have worked really, really hard to make that a soft border.
Indeed, they have.
And clearly there's no interest in seeing any kind of controls going back into that border, customs or otherwise. So these are very big challenges, and I think Ireland has a particular skin in this game compared to other EU member states. But we're working very hard to ensure that the other EU member states are clear and understand the particular concerns that we have in this as we look forward now to inheriting an external border of the European, external frontier of the European Union, which is something we've never had before. So there's a lot in this, and I think it's going to consume the public class, the public service, the political classes, and I think public conversation as well for some years to come.
It's incredible how Britain shot themselves in both feet. It's just an astonishing event.
Can I just say as well, I mean, just going back to Ireland, it's in many ways it's a new Ireland from the one that I came out, that I left 4.5 years ago.
Yes.
You know, it was a country with 32% GDP deficit. It was a country with over 15% unemployment. You go back to a country now with somewhere around 7.5% employment. The deficit is south of 3% at this stage and going south. And next year, if the current statistics or current trends are maintained, we're going to see net migration into Ireland. And that was almost unthinkable 4.5 years ago, that economic turnaround. But it's been hard. it's been hard, and people have suffered for it, people have worked for us.
Well, people, I think some people are still...
People have emigrated, Barry.
Some people are still suffering. No, it's not all roses
absolutely.
Just yet, it's
and
far
it's
from
not
it.
Not all over, no, I agree with you entirely. But it's a vastly different picture than the one that we've than the story that I brought with me 4.5 years ago. You know, if someone had said to me at that stage, you and I were having that conversation the first time we spoke, and said, what do you think the economy is going to look like in 4.5 years when you're leaving? I don't think we would have come up with this answer, you know.
With the 100-year commemoration, that has helped the influx of tourism. That certainly must have helped the economy as well.
I think, yeah, it's too early to say. I mean, it's still going on, but I think the whole 1916 commemoration, centenary commemoration, has been a great success. We've done a lot with it out here as well, and we've been able to connect with Irish communities and to shine a light on the whole Irish influence in Australia, the social, cultural, and political connections, also the direct impact that the 1916 Rising had on politics around the world, including here in Australia at the time. And that's been a very interesting exercise. We still have some events to take place during the course between now and the end of the year. I know in Adelaide in particular, those events are, I think, November, December. I don't have the precise dates to hand. But much of it, as you would expect, has been front-loaded into the first half of the year.
Well,
but
I think...
Very good.
I was in Ireland there a couple of months ago, or less, maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago, and I think people are a bit over it now. They've nearly done their dash, haven't they?
Well, it has been front-loaded, as I've said. I mean, a lot of the main events naturally were going to take place either around Easter or around the date of the rising itself, the actual date of the rising. And I think that's where most of the events are. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was the main focus of attraction. But there are some events still going on, and we have some still left on some on our website for the embassy as well. Can I just mention that in general, one of the things we've been trying to do here for the past few years is to pick up the quality of the website, the social media, that sort of stuff, so that we can connect with the community. So, you know, anything like that, big events, major events, and so on, they're all set out and details are provided on the embassy. I think it's embassyofireland.ie, or if you put in Embassy of Ireland, Canberra, or Australia on your search engine, you get it. And we've upgraded the website. It's not bad at all. And I say we have two Twitter accounts, and we're working hard on our Facebook, Barry, you know, but we have two Twitter accounts out there which we use quite a bit, and I find it very useful for just reaching out to people, you know.
Oh yeah, fortunately there's a lot of good people working for the Irish, you know, in Canberra, but around the country as well for Ireland.
Around the country, can I just take the opportunity to thank them as well? It's been a great privilege to work with them both here. Some of them are Dublin staff, and some, but many of them are local staff.
Yes,
locally recruited staff. Some of them have strong connections with Ireland. Some of them have less strong connections with Ireland. But all of them who are deeply dedicated to the work that they do. The embassy in Canberra is when we take the embassy in Canberra and Sydney, the consulate in Sydney together. We are the busiest mission post, consular post, in terms of the numbers of passports that we produce. We're second busiest in the entire network of over 80 missions around the world, and that's not something that people often realise. And we get through it. Sometimes there are delays, but we get through it. You know.
Yep.
But there's a lot of dedication in there to making sure that you know, people can get to travel when they need to travel. And are any other services, that any other consular services that they might need, or, you know, God forbid, whenever people get in trouble or spot a difficulty, that we're there to provide consular support for them, and that the size of the country doesn't become an issue for us, that we can overcome that, because we have offices and we have communities and we have groups, welfare groups in particular, all around the country who help us out, who act as eyes and ears on the ground for us, and I'm deeply grateful to all of them for what they've done while I've been here and for what they do generally.
Quite busy in the north of Ireland with both communities, and I say both communities applying for Irish passport. Is that have they got an increased affection for Ireland, or is it just panic mode? They're trying to get.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there was a spike in interest around Irish passports and queries around Irish passports in the immediate aftermath of Brexit. But I haven't looked at the figures in the last couple of days, but we were tracking those figures, and we think that my sense of it at the moment is that things have calmed down a bit. The minister made it very clear at the time that you know, there was no need for anyone for any major rush around this thing. We're not changing our rules of citizenship, and you know, the Brexit process is not going to happen overnight, and that really people needn't worry too much about that if you're entitled to a passport or citizenship. And there's no need for everyone to rush into the office at the same time. But it was an initial spike, but I think it has calmed a bit now. And but people are coming to us, and we'll keep a track of the numbers. But it's all manageable, you know.
Very good. Can you give me? Is there a positive for Ireland out of Britain doing a dumb thing that?
Well, you know, this is. I'm reluctant to start. Analyzing, even at this stage, to analyze Brexit in those terms. I mean, I think if you said to us right now, look, I've got a number of positives that are going to come from this. You know, many companies might want to set up in Ireland that wouldn't otherwise have done, because Ireland is the only English speaking member state in the Eurozone.
How about the banks?
And so on. And well, the banks, financial the ones that get typically mentioned are the banks and financial services and so on. But I think if you said to me in the morning, look, I've got X number of banks I want to set up in Ireland in one end, or you can have Britain in the European Union, which do you want? I think there's no hesitation in saying what you want is Britain in the European Union. But Brexit is Brexit, so we're dealing with that now. And so I think getting into the business of, you know, a cold calculation of the upsides versus the downsides, you know, if we don't know the extent of the downsides at this stage, we have a pretty good idea of where they hit, but we don't know the full extent of them, then we're not in a position to say that there's a ledger here with so much value on one side and so much value on the other. It's too early to say. It's not to say that we, you know, some things might flow from it that might work to our favour, but really, you know, I think right now the focus is on dealing with what's in front of us.
I think a change is probably good. Listen to Ambassador Nolan White. Noel, we thank you very much for your generous time during your tenure. You've been very, very easy to get hold of and easy to talk to. And the Irish over here, of course, we very much appreciate your huge effort. And you've done a great job. And we really wish you the very, very best in your continuing career. I'm sure that you'll go far. At least you're going to go another 12,000 miles back to Ireland. Look at you.
Barry, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on. I've appreciated it. It's been great. It's been very useful, very helpful, and very friendly. And I've always welcomed the privilege of being able to get on the wireless with you. And it's something I enjoy doing, and I find it good and useful and the right thing to do.
We do as well.
I think you provide, like many others out there in the area you're in, I think you provide a very good and important service. And long live community radio. I think it's a good thing. Thank you for your kind words and your support, and thanks also to the community for all its kindness and support. It's something I'll cherish for a long time, and I mean that. It's very, very precious.
You're a good man. All the very best. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks a lot, Barry. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.